It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. First responders encounter people in a range of mental and physical states in the course of their work, whether the first people on a scene are law enforcement officers or medical personnel, and it can have a big impact on how people showing symptoms of a condition called excited delirium are dealt with. Haley Sperling is an engagement editor and reporter with WisContext, and her most recent piece is Examining the Emergency Medical Playbook for Treating Excited Delirium. It's a follow-up to a piece on excited delirium she wrote in June. Both articles can be found at wiscontext.org. Ideas Network producer Chris Molina recently spoke with Haley Sperling about the topic.
This is your second article looking at this idea of excited delirium. Remind us what that means.
So excited delirium is essentially a medical condition that exhibits itself in individual, oftentimes dealing with either drug overdose, withdrawals, or any sort of mental health problems. Its symptoms generally include almost superhuman strength, body temperature increases, a kind of lack of response to general requests. So basically it's kind of your body overheating, and then eventually, if left unchecked, it can shut down.
Is there a medically agreed upon definition here or not?
It's an interesting question because it's something that's really debated between the medical community and the law enforcement community. So law enforcement and EMS medical examiners generally accept it as a real medical condition, but it has been hotly debated, especially recently, because a lot of groups see it as more so a way for people to sort of cover their tracks. Excited delirium is typically used in cases of police use of force. So if a taser is used, if someone is taken down physically, and then they inevitably die from those injuries, excited delirium has been noted as a cause of death. But, its history comes about more so from the 1980s, when it was used to describe cocaine overdoses in individuals. So, they'd get that really rapid heartbeat, sweating, the superhuman strength, and then just suddenly kind of crash. But now we see it with these use of force cases where people have these symptoms exhibiting, but then are hit by a taser and inevitably succumb to those injuries.
So you talked about how the police use this, but in your most recent piece, you look at the issue of first responders in particular, who might be a police officer, might be an EMT worker, and how they deal with situations when they encounter an emotionally disturbed person, is the term, or an EDP. What did you learn about the protocols that are in place for first responders here?
So essentially what happens is that, when police get a call, they really just have to listen to what is going on in the situation. So one of the main sources that I talked to just said it's really important right away to identify this situation as if you find out that you're dealing with an EDP or someone dealing with excited delirium, that it's important to get the EMS team on the scene right away, because they'll be the ones who are able to actually administer the drugs and medicine to calm the person down. But oftentimes police are the first responders on the scene. So it's really up to them to calm the situation down, try and talk to this person, even though, they might not be in the proper emotional state to have a functioning conversation. But they're really in charge of kind of controlling the scene, making sure that there isn't a danger to themselves, anyone around the area, and that this person can be kind of subdued in an easier way. Police really, they, in their training guidelines and all the guidelines that I looked over for this reporting, they mention calling EMS right away, so getting emergency medical teams on the scene, and then also using softer restraint practices. So, not putting these people in handcuffs right away or something that could make them even further agitated and further elevate their heart rate or body temperature, which can all be really dangerous to that person in that situation.
And I'm curious, too, you mentioned training. I'm wondering how much training is taking place about excited delirium, and where is that training coming from?
So for a lot of these first responders, it's part of their required courses. For EMS training, it's a required, subject matter for people wanting to go into that field to have to deal with this. There's also different groups across the state that help with this training. So one of them that I had spoken to for this article was the Crisis Intervention Training Team, which is hosted more or less by NAMI Wisconsin, which helps deal and, you know, educate the general population about mental illnesses and different mental health strategies. So what the CIT team does, they come in and they'll work with police departments or with EMS schools and help train people on handling these high stress situations. And this is about a 40-hour training with the CIT team.
We are talking right now with Haley Sperling. She's an engagement editor and reporter with WisConText, and her most recent piece is Examining the Emergency Medical Playbook for Treating Excited Delirium. And Haley, with the training and the protocols that we have been talking about, are these aimed at protecting the victims? Are they aimed at protecting the first responders, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because, you know, it really comes to the entire picture. You know, you want the persons, you know, suffering from this ailment to be safe. You want them to be okay. But then again, you don't want any of the officers or first responders on the scene to get hurt along the way or any possible bystanders to get injured along the way. So one thing that police do when they get on the scene, you know, right after discovering that, okay, this is an excited delirium case or this is a person who is emotionally disturbed, you know, after they call EMS, they try and, you know, secure the scene and make sure that any other people who could be put in harm's way are out of that way. And again, they're, you know, trying to use softer restraint tactics. So, you know, having multiple people or multiple first responders rather on the scene can help, you know, neutralize the individual in question without having to deploy any sort of tasers or anything like that. So what the police are really trying to do is calm everyone down, wait until EMS comes, and then EMS can come and actually, you know, administer ketamine or, you know, haloperidol is something that's used as well to really physically calm someone down.
And in writing these articles, do you see any movement towards more informed and consistent responses in these situations?
You know, I think it's an interesting question because it's something that changes. You know, these protocols are examined all the time and, you know, all the sources I've talked to, you know, they're constantly looking at new technology and, you know, we live in a world that's constantly changing and developing every day, so they have to go with that. But generally across the board, the training has remained relatively the same. You know, it's getting someone on the scene, it's calling EMS, there's, you know, some minor discrepancies between drugs that are used, but overall it's a lot of ketamine, a lot of haloperidol. So I think people have kind of come to the consensus on what works and what doesn't. But, you know, like I've said in the past, there's always room for things to grow and change because, you know, these are professionals who are staying on top of the field and, you know, they're just trying to do the best work that they can. But, you know, that's every situation is different, so it can kind of just come down to the situation at hand.
And as we said, this was the second article that you wrote for WisContext looking at this concept. Do you have any additional plans to follow up on this reporting?
Yeah, so thanks for asking. there's actually going to be another article in the works. So one thing about excited delirium is that, you know, in past interviews I've mentioned that it's not recognized by the APA or the AMA. It's also not listed in the DSM-5, I believe, or ICD-10, which are basically just the manuals that professionals use as the baseline to diagnose mental illnesses as well as just physical diseases. So when excited delirium is listed as a cause of death, it has to be categorized as something else because, like I said, the ICD-10 does not list excited delirium as an actual ailment. So it's not like a medical examiner can write down the corresponding number. They're going to be writing something else. So I'm trying to look into what is actually what excited delirium is being coded as when it is listed as a cause of death, and trying to find out how many times that code has been used in the state of Wisconsin and just kind of go from there and see how many times this has actually happened and what people in the medical community are really calling it when it comes down to the actual technicality of it.
All right. Haley, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Ideas Network producer Chris Molina speaking with WIS Context editor and reporter Haley Sperling about her most recent article on the topic of excited delirium. You can find this article and more at wiscontext.org. The Morning Show is produced by Sarah Hopeful, Chris Molina, Colleen Leahy, Laura Pavin, Rhymes, and Jana Rose Schleiss. Brianne Chasso and Kaylee Boltina is executive producer. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network.